I understand that you all did the Mishnah yesterday and Kukman Gemara and Bedi.
Oh, yeah, right.
We may as well run it over again,
okay,
because the Gemara is going to depend on it after all.
Well, you know.
Mishnah says, yeah, well, once in a while, you know, you have a Gemara that has nothing directly so much to do with the Mishnah. Yeah, okay. So the Mishnah says, the person died and left behind older sons and younger sons. So now if the older sons go and improve the property while the estate is still undivided, we're still talking about concepts, which is also going to be in the next couple of Mishnayos, about where they haven't divided up the estate. So the older ones went and then made improvements. The improvements go to the middle. In other words, it's a common property of everybody. When eventually they do split up the property, the younger children are going to get an equal portion in these improvements along with the older children. Joseph says that actually would be the same thing. No, we'll see that in the Gemara. We'll see in the Gemara. We'll make that distinction. But wait. Joseph talked about that it doesn't necessarily have to be that some of the children are older and some are younger. It would be the same thing if they're all older. Just typically, when you have older and younger ones, the older ones who are involved in improving it. There are Rishonim who argue differently and say that maybe only when it's older and younger, then the older ones are willing to be moichel on what they accomplished in favor of the younger ones, but not necessarily if they're older. Okay. Im Amru, but if the older sons say, and the Rashbam says they have to say it in front of Edim, or in front of a Beis Din, or the Tzibur, but they, in any case, they say, Ru'u Mashi Niachava, look, here's what our father left us. Hareyanu Oisin Va'oslin, we plan to be working on it and having the proceeds from it. Then Hishbichu La'af, meaning the older children are saying, we're not planning to do it for the common property anymore. We're doing it having in mind that we are ready to divide up. We're ready to divide up, and from now on, we're going to consider such and such a portion to be our portion. What happens is that Rashbam says Beis Din didn't get around to dividing it up fast enough. So meanwhile, it's still joint property, and then they go, having made this declaration, and start making improvements. Yishbichul Atma, and then indeed the improvements are only for themselves. They don't have to share it with the other heirs. Okay.
Without
an announcement, it would be equally divided, and with it, it would be, yeah. Yeah. Tosfos discusses a little bit, are we talking about over here that he's using only the proceeds from the part that's going to come to him in order to improve things, or is he maybe using the resources of the entire property, but we're still saying that maybe it only goes to him. And Tosfos discusses how this would relate to the dina we learned back in Bava Metzia, for example, that let's say you go into somebody else's property without his rishus and start improving it, you're entitled to a certain percentage of it, like an oris. But Tosfos deals with how that fits in over here. The difference. Because in this case, effectively, some of it is eventually going to be the other children's property. But anyway, so Tosfos learns that what it is because the difference is if you don't have the older children doing these improvements, then nothing's going to happen. As opposed to the case where you go into somebody else's property and improve it, that person could have just as well done it himself. So Tosfos draws a distinction on that. Okay. Similarly, if the wife whose husband died improves the property, and we'll see in the Gemara what's she doing managing the property anyway. How does she come to be a Yodish? We'll discuss in the Gemara. Ishbichalansa, same thing. Then her improvements all go to the common pool, and everybody shares in it. And similarly, Im Amra, if she makes a declaration, look, here's what my husband left me, and I want to divide it. From now on, I'm going to be working in it and taking the proceeds from my own portion for myself. Ishbichal Atma, then indeed her improvements go to any improvements or any gains, any earnings or whatever go specifically to her. So you mentioned about there might be a distinction between whether you put something into it or not. So the Gemara says, Amar Chabibi Breder of Yosef Breder Rava, Mishmeder Rava, this is Rava's own grandson saying in his name. Loishanu Elisha Shavkun Nechafin Matmas Nechafin. This is only talking about this that we say in the first part of the Mishnah, Yishbichul Atman, Yishbichul Emsa, rather, that the improvement, the Shvach, goes to the common pool. That is only if it's Shavkun Nechafin Matmas Nechafin. If the improvement to the property is from the property itself. Meaning, so the Rashbam understands that to mean, that they, let's say, for example, they took some of the mechatzim that their father left them, they used that money to hire workers, and that improved the property. So no outside thing was brought, no outside thing was brought into it. So then he shvichu la'emtzah. Avol shofchu mechatzim
matmatam.
No, because that's not considered waste. Okay. Avol shofchu mechatzim matmatam, but if the mechatzim were improved because of themselves, meaning that they themselves, for example, they worked, they hired workers or whatever, they brought in something external. Tosfos and many other Rishonim talk about the details of it here. Would it be enough if they do the work by themselves without hiring workers? Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, do we consider that their time and energy is worth, or maybe not. Maybe it has to be that there was actually money laid out over here, not just labor. Okay, anyway. If Shavchon Chosim Akhmet Asman Ishvichu La'atman, then their Shvach goes to themselves. Then they're allowed to keep it even without making that declaration.
And if it's both, let's say they improve the property by paying themselves salary that comes from the selling of assets.
But that's nechasim machnas. So that comes down to the question basically. So it's nechasim machnas nechasim. They're not bringing in any outside money, but they themselves are putting work into it. Is that enough? That's machlokes we're showing him. Yeah. It's interesting. The Rambam had apparently a different girsa in the Gemara over here, which he understands Chaviver Breder of Yosef's thing to be referring not to the first part of the Mishnah, but rather to the second part. Rather to the second part of the Mishnah. That when do we say that the Shvichu La'atman is once they say Ruumashini Aslan Abba is only if it was Nechasim Machnas Atman. In other words, according to the Rambam, you'd need both. They had to have made that declaration, and they need to be putting in their own resources into it rather than resources from the property itself.
Not making the declaration.
It has to be both. So actually, in the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch takes the unusual step of telling us that the Rambam is a daf yachid in it, and there seems to be no other Rishon who holds that way. So the halacha is like everybody else that it's the version that we have here in the Gemara that it's one or the other. If they put in their own resources, or if they made the declaration, either way, then they're entitled to keep it. The Gemara says, "Any? Is that so? You're telling me that you need nechasim machmas atman? You need them to put in some external resources into it in order to be able to keep it?" But Amar Rav Chanina, but we see that Rav Chanina said, "Afilu lahiniach lahem aviyam ela udyoni." Even if their father only left them an udyoni, I'll explain in a second what an udyoni is. I just want to finish the sentence first. Then the schar of it goes to the common property. Now, what is an udyoni? The Rashbam says it means a pit, a water pit with a cover. So therefore, what they do is they rent it out to people that people come and use it for watering their fields, and they pay a certain amount of rental to it. And we're saying that's chayla emsa. Now, on the face of it, there's no nechasim. On the face of it, then vod yoni de machmas atmoi. Who on the face of it isn't that machmas atmoi? The older brothers are watching it. They have to watch it to make sure nobody takes the water. That nobody just takes. And we see, nevertheless, it goes la emsa. So you see that even if they're putting in machmas atmoi, even if they're putting in their own resources, it still goes la emsa. Tosfos gives a different explanation that udyoni is a tall keli that people stand on when they're guarding a field or a vineyard or whatever. They stand on it to be able to see it. So therefore, the idea is, in other words, so they have a stool or whatever that they stand on to look out at a distance. So therefore, it would be a similar idea. In other words, that they stand on that in order to watch the field. And we say the schar goes lamsa. They don't say that us watching the field was a benefit to it, that it prevented things from getting stolen or whatever, and therefore we're entitled to that ourselves. It goes to the common property. Well, why should it? The answer is shiny udyani tirusa udavida. Yes, but it's different. And udyani, whatever it is the basic thing that's done with it is the guard. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says it's something even little kids could do that. Even little kids could guard the well, stand on this thing to watch the field or whatever. So therefore, you can't really consider. Therefore, you can't really say that this is something that the elder brothers put in serious actual work into, such that you should say that it doesn't go lambda.
Maybe they were saving it from animals.
Even animals, I mean, little kids.
That way, that would make sense for little kids to protect, for the little kids to protect against the other people.
Coming. No, well, we're not talking about, like, armed bandits are coming to steal
no,
the water or whatever.
Water.
Stop talking. Somebody is going to come. He's going to see nobody's around and sneak in and steal some water. But even if,
Like Zaman's got his bike stolen.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the child smaller than Zaman, they've just been this big,
a teenager.
I want to describe the guy too colorful.
Okay, whatever. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But just by even being there,
yeah.
Oh, there was police there, too.
Okay.
Yeah, there were police trying
Never mind. We interrupted.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So I'll continue. Anyway, so that's the point, in other words. So if it's something that the little kids themselves could have done, then we say even though they did the tircha themselves, nevertheless, we'll still say it goes light and say yeah. Even children could have watched it, so therefore you can't say that they actually put in any real thing of their own into it. And the Mishnah said, "Amru umashi niachaba." That we said, if the older brothers said, "Look, this is where they make this declaration. Look, this is what our father left us." We plan, we would like to split it up, and therefore we plan to start working on it and using the proceeds. Then we said, and then from then on, any shvach from their portion goes to themselves. So the Gemara tells the case. Rav Safra shavak abu azuzi. Rav Safra, his father passed away and left his children some money. Shaklinu ovid bahu iska. So Rav Safra took the money and did an investment. Now, this is considered, the Rashbam says, this is considered shvach nechotim machmas nechotim, because it's not really that hard there just to sit in a store and buy and sell. But therefore, it can't really be considered nechotim machmas achman. It can't really be considered, therefore, that he put anything serious into it, because it's somewhat, in a way, it's similar to the udaini, not really, because children can't do it. But the point is, still, it's a very straightforward thing to do. Also, achi tavu b'dinah kamed rabba. So his brothers went and took him to a din Torah in front of rabba. You shouldn't be able to keep all the proceeds. Shouldn't be able to keep the proceeds for yourself. They should go to emsa. They should go to the common pool. Amalahu, so Rav Safra tells him, this is a special case. Rav Safra gabra rabbahu. Rav Safra is a great talmid chacham, meaning that he spends all of his time learning. He's not totally Torah Masseh like Rashbi or something. I mean, he is managing the store, but basically he won't take any extra time out of his learning any more than is necessary just to make a living and then immediately go back to his learning. Therefore, the shavat girsa v'tarach l'achrini. We can assume that he wouldn't set aside his learning in order to be tereach for other people. Therefore, it's the equivalent of him having said rule mashin yachlanu abba. Even though he didn't actually make such a declaration in front of Beis Din or Edim or what have you, it's the equivalent of having done that. Because we can assume that somebody like Rav Safra, who spends all of the time that he has outside of making a living learning, we can assume that he's not doing this iska in order to benefit himself and his brothers collectively. He's doing it only for his own parnasa. So therefore, it can be considered as if he said ru'u mashini yachlanu abba. So Tosfos on the previous Amud talks about that maybe the situation over here is Rav Safra's brothers were still children themselves. So Tosfos had drawn the distinction before whether the other brothers themselves could have done this or not. In this case, they couldn't have done it; they were ketanim. So therefore you need this reason that because he's a gabri rabba, only that is a valid reason why the children would be merciful to him. Now, so is that actually so does that actually exist nowadays? And Mukha Yosef says that no, you don't have Talmud Chacham of that caliber nowadays, and therefore you can't apply this halacha. On the other hand, the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch says, sure you can. If you have somebody who is like that now, even now, who spends all of his time learning outside of what he needs for parnasa, then yes, absolutely, the same thing would apply to him. Okay.
Now, Rav Safra is the one that when he was davening, someone said to him, he's going to be immortal.
Yes, indeed, that's the one. We'll learn it at the end of Makkos in a few months' time, Be'ez Hashem, yep. Yeah. Okay, maybe that was the same store, I don't know. Okay.
And then he was giving extra to the stranger than left to his own family.
That wasn't giving extra to the stranger. That was, he was willing to take the original price because it was a fair price. He wasn't, yeah. Okay. All right. The Mishnah continued. We said that if the wife improves the property, Schwicheland. It's the same thing. We said the extra schwach that she created goes to the common pool. The question is, Ichse Ishab and Ichse Yachmi, Maya Vita. What's the wife doing, what's the almana doing with the property of the Yisraelim anyway? Usually the situation is either she collects Uksuba and then that's it, she's out of the picture. And the Yisraelim inherit the rest. Or as we look way back in Ksubas, she could continue to keep house for the Yisraelim. She will be entitled to Mizonis out of the estate. But then also her Maisiyah Deah are going to go to them. They'll stand in the place of her husband. So where is there a situation over here where she's improving the property, where you have to ask whether the improvements are going to be hers or whether they're going to be to the common pool? So Rabbi Yirmiya says you can be talking about a wife who herself is a Yerush. Now, how is that? But Rashbam gives a few scenarios. One of them is, let's say, for example, so he says, let's say Reuven married Shimon's daughter. Shimon died. Shimon dies. Later on, Reuven also dies. Now the question is, Shimon died. Who is it that died? Yaakov died. Yaakov is their father. The father of Reuben and Shimon. So Reuben married Shimon's daughter, which is perfectly allowed. A man is allowed to marry his niece. In fact, the Gemara in a few places mentions it's a good thing to do. We learned it way back in Iran. Okay, so he married his niece. Now Yaakov dies. So now Reuben and Shimon also dies. The father of Reuben's wife. So now, Reuben and Shimon's daughter are jointly going to inherit the property of Yaakov, because as we learned in the previous Pedek, when a son is dead, or a daughter is going to be the one Yashining, then his or her heirs after that take over in their place, like no sloth. So that's one way you could have that the wife inherits. So then it's Reuben's wife then. Tosfos has a problem with that explanation because the Mishnah used the expression look what my husband left me. In this case, it wasn't left to her by her husband; it was left to her by her grandfather. The Mishnah didn't say that. The Mishnah didn't say no. But the fact is, the Mishnah used the expression look what my husband left me. So that seems to imply Tosfos says that can't be the situation.
Which is her husband's father,
yeah. Okay, and Tosfos mentions another explanation from the Rivam, a bit of a refinement of it, that Reuven himself also dies, and then he has younger brothers or younger nephews, so she is actually yashining from her husband. She ends up yashining the property that Reuven got from Yaakov as well. But then she's taking care of the Yisrael. All of that is one scenario. Another way that Rashbam says is you could just have that her husband had declared her one of the Yerushim among the children. We learned in the previous parak that you can do that. The titel ishti kachad min abonim. And then a third way would just be that her father died. He had only daughters, like Flachbud, and she's one of the daughters who inherited. So you have a number of different ways in which a woman can yashin. Tosfos ends up saying that if we do accept the Rashbam's first explanation that the scenario where Reuven married Shimon's daughter, we can still make it work with the words of the Mishnah, Rumashi Nechli Baili, because ultimately any property that she gets becomes Nichsim Malug, and the husband eats payers of it. So therefore, when eventually Reuven dies, yeah, you can call it Hiniachli Baili, even though the Nechassim originally came to her from her grandfather Yaakov. But they were part owned. Her husband Reuven had Kenyan payers on it, and therefore it can be called in the Yachli Bible. Okay. Anyway, the point is that she is a wife or a woman who yashin. So then the question is Pshita. In that case, then it's obvious what's the difference between her doing that and one of the older brothers doing that. It's the same thing. The answer is Ma'udatema, Kivin de Lab Dautala Mitrach. Yes, but you could say it's not usual for her to go. It's not usual for her to go and keep house for the Yisomim, and to manage the property for whatever for them. It's not usual. Therefore, Therefore, afagapale parish kamanda parishtami. Therefore, you would think that even if she didn't explicitly say that I'm doing this for myself, you would think maybe it's automatically a given that she's doing it for herself. Kamash malon, that is the chiddush, that's the same thing. If she didn't say Ru mashin yachli baili, we still say it's like so. It may not be usual, but without such a declaration or without another consideration, like the case of Rav Safra or whatever, we have no reason to say that it shouldn't go lamsa.
Whereas you could have thought that it was.
You could have thought if the Mishnah didn't say it, you could have thought that maybe the case of brothers doing it on behalf of their younger brothers is different than the Almana doing it on behalf of the children. Especially Tosfos brings up that one of the scenarios that we mentioned, how she could be a Yodish, would be that the children we're talking about are not even her own children. They could be her. They could be her nephews. They could be her stepchildren. So you would have thought that maybe to begin with, when she's Hishvicha et Nechasim, she always means to have it in mind for herself, for her own benefit. No, unless she says Ru Mashi Nechli Baili, then no, we don't say that. All right. Then we said, "V'im amra u'mashi nechli baili." But if she made this declaration and said that, "Look, this is what my husband left me. I want to divide up the estate, and from now on, I'm going to manage my own portion." Then we said, "Hishbichala harini oisav echelas." She says, "Yes, from now on, I want to work in it and keep the proceeds for myself." Hishbichala atma. Then any shvach goes directly to her. Okay. Again, the question is pshita. And the answer is ma'ud tema. Yes, you could argue the other way around. Given the shvichala milsa. Since there is this benefit for her, the benefit is that it gives her a good name. Yes, it might not be usual that she keeps house and manages the property and whatever on behalf of the assignment. But nevertheless, if she does, it gives her a good name. The Amri Kotarcha Kama Yasmi, people say, look at the tzadekis. She's taking care of the yisrael. She's doing so good for the yisraelim. You would think on that basis, Achulei Achla, even if she makes this declaration, maybe she still is moichel afterwards and says, you know what, never mind. I'll continue doing it on behalf of the yisraelim. I'd like to keep that good name that I got. Kamash Malon, that's the chiddush that we say, that we don't say that. Once she made that declaration, that's it. She can keep the payrus and the shvach and whatever for herself from now on.
Why?
Again, you could think that's the
tenuous thing, but if she makes a declaration to her own benefit, she would still give.
She still might think that after all, you know what, the benefit of the good name that I'll have in the community maybe outweighs that. No, we don't say that. Okay, it's a point that we needed to be told. All right. Now we're going to go on to kind of a new topic. I'm not real sure actually what the connection of it is to our Gemara, but it goes like this. Omer of Chanina, Hamasi Isha Lebnoi Godol Bayis. If a father marries off his oldest son, maybe that's the connection, because we said Bnoi Le Mekan, and we have the older son and the younger son, but I don't know. He marries off his older son, the Bayis, in a house, Knoi, then the son is Kona that house. It now becomes his new house,
wow.
with exceptions that we will see soon in the Gemara. Now, one of the things the Gemara does. So he has a house.
Right.
He made the wedding for his son in that house.
Without any kind of separation?
Yeah. That's the point. Maybe that's another reason why it goes over here in our Mishnah. You needed to make a declaration, but in this case, you don't. Yeah, because so the basic reason is the basic reason. And now there are the Gemara is going to mention a few exceptions to it. The Rishonim mentioned some other ones that are not explicitly stated in the Gemara, but among them are, first of all, it has to be the son's first marriage. Second of all, it has to be he's marrying a b'sula, so he's not marrying it's both the chassan and the kala's first marriage.
Uh-huh.
It has to be his eldest son, the Gemara said that. It also has to be, according to many of the Rishonim, it has to be that the father himself has another house to live in. He's not going to leave himself home. But the point is, if you no, it's not necessarily, but the Rama mentions that. I don't know if everybody agrees there. The point is, with now, the Gemara is going to say, at the end of the Amud that this is sort of Hilchos B'lo Taima. This is sort of like a halacha without a reason. It's like almost like a Gzeiras HaKasuv, sort of. There is a logical reason behind it, which the Rambam says is because of the Simcha, that he's marrying off his first son, and that it's he's marrying her to Absullah, and so on and so forth. The Simcha is so great that he wants that he's willing to, having made the wedding in this house, that he's willing to transfer ownership of it to his son, even without saying so. However, let's see some exceptions. Actually, the Basula, it says an Argamara over here. I forgot. Okay.
Yes.
The chuppah has to be in that chuppah, the yichud room, whatever. I mean, I don't know if it means the chuppah like we do it now. There's machlokes are showing him when we talk about the Gemara. The term chuppah doesn't mean the chuppah as we think of it now, or does it mean something more like the yichud room? But whatever. Yeah, the point is that the house was used for the wedding. So yeah, some of these details that I just mentioned are in the Gemara over here. The one about the father who has a different house, that's the one that's not mentioned in the Gemara here. Okay. So the davka gadol. First of all, davka has to be his eldest son because then he really wants to do something special. The davka b'sula, davka when the son is marrying a b'sula, because then there's a greater simcha. The davka ishta rishona, it has to davka be the son's first wedding also. The davka shisi rishon, and also it has to be that not only it's the oldest son, but this is the oldest son and he's the first one in the family to get married. But not if one of his younger brothers or sisters, I guess, got married before.
She seriously means the first.
Means that it's the first. Means that the first child that he married off. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now let's go into some details.
First son or the first child?
The first son. The pashtus is
his daughter.
So if he has a daughter who got married ahead, I don't know. I mean, usually in those times. In those times, the minhag was generally that the chassan's family paid for most of the wedding, including the beis chasnas or whatever. So therefore, if you're marrying off a daughter of a pashtus, I mean, you have an adam to provide, but whoever she's marrying, yeah, her husband's parents are going to be the ones providing the beis chasnas. Yeah. Okay. So let's go into some details about it. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says pshita. Now it's obvious that as follows: yichud le'aviv bayis valia. What if the father set aside for this purpose a house that also has a second floor? Then there's no question bayis kana aliya le'kana. Then there's no question the son is only kana the ground floor, not the second floor, because there's no reason to think that the second floor is meshubad to the ground floor.
The second floor that has a separate entrance
doesn't really matter. I mean, it's
pretty much the sleeping room.
In Gemara terminology, Aliyah usually, like we have in Rav Matiyah, and we have in Matzah Rav Matiyah, and Aliyah usually means a separate apartment upstairs. It may have. You may have to go in and out through the ground floor apartment, but it's a separate living area of its own. What about Bayis Achsadra Mahu? But what about if it's a house with an Achsadra, with a porch in front of it, an entryway, that is. If he made the wedding in the bayis, is he kohen of the achsadra as well? And shnei batim zelafinim mizemahu. What if you have two rooms, one inside the other, where you have an inner room that the only way to get in and out of it is through the outer one? So if they made it with the wedding in the inner room, so the Rashbam explains that that's sort of like an intim tzoloima. An achsadra, you could argue, is secondary to the house. You don't have an achsadra by itself. It's usually an accompaniment of a house. As opposed to shnei bakim zelus nimizeh, not necessarily is one really meshubad to the other. Tosfos says the other way around. Actually, an aliyah we could say because you can argue an achsadra is more closely connected with the house, as opposed to an aliyah is not really that closely connected with the ground floor. On the other hand, you could argue maybe he's not kohen of the achsadra because there's no real tashmish in it. You don't really use an achsadra for much except for going in and out. As opposed to maybe shnei batim zelus nimizeh, maybe it's considered like one big house. Anyway, the answer is with all of them taken, and therefore, practically speaking, the son doesn't get the achsadra or the second house or whatever because it's not available for that. Maybe the Gemara says, okay, I have a contradiction to this whole concept. So you're telling me then that the father made the wedding in this house, and therefore the son is kind of the house. But we learn in a braita, yichud le'aviv bayis to play bayis, and his father set aside for him a house along with furniture or household utensils or in it or whatever. Klei bayis kona, bayis le'kona. He's kona the furniture, but he's not kona the house. So, as we said before, he's kona the house. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, yes, but that last braita is talking about suppose the father had a storage space in there. So therefore, the fact that the father is still using the house, he still intends to continue using it. So he's not being machna the house itself to itself. But he said, I'm machna the furniture in it, so fine, the furniture he's cutting.
If he has a storage house,
if he's using it as a warehouse or whatever. So he doesn't mean to be machna the house itself, but he means to be machna the furniture. Okay. Nahardoi, I'm reading the Nahardoi, you say it doesn't even need to be that it's a whole warehouse. It could even be, afilu shoycha de yonim, even if the father only has in the house a birdhouse, that's enough to prevent that the son is not toiner. Because as long as the father has some kind of tfisus yad, as long as he has some kind of still something in there that he still owns, then it means he's not mocking the house to his son.
An office or a...
Yes, even we're saying even a birdhouse, yeah. Rabbi Yehuda would have papi amr, afilu akpitsa de house now. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi said, even less than that, even if all he has in there is a container full of fried fish, a bowl full of tuna fish or something, yeah. And some more examples. Mazutra Anseve Lebre, Mazutra married off his son, and he didn't want that he's going to be mocking in the house to his son. Therefore, Tolove Sandala. Therefore, what he did is he hung a sandal in there, and the sandal belonged to him. So that way, he still has some specific yard in the house, and therefore, he's not mocking in the house. By the way, you have a vaguely similar concept. By the way, when it comes to Hilchos Eruvin, we know this concept that if you're making an Eruv Chaseres and you have a goy living in that chaser in a house in one of the houses in the chaser, you need to be soicher reshus from him. You need to symbolically rent the property from him in order to be able to make an Eruv. But one of the details in it is if you have a tefisas yad in his house, if you have, for example, the storage area if you have an area in his house that you have for storage and that you're able to freely come and go in it, then you don't
have to be agronomist.
Generally, a house in order to be something else, in order to be anything.
In a storage house.
Because we said even a sandal. The sandal was often 4x4. He just hung it up on the wall, but that's enough. Rav Ashi Nasve Lebre, similarly Rav Ashi married off his son, V'tololei Ashisha D'mishcha, and he hung up a container full of oil. Again, same thing. So he still has a resource in there, and therefore he's not machmir to his son. So the point of all of this anyway is, again, obviously the father could declare, he could make an official declaration, similar to what we said in the Mishnah, look, I'm marrying off my son in this house, but I'm not intending to be machmir to him. But you don't even need that. As long as he left in there something of his, that itself is enough to demonstrate that he doesn't intend to be machmir. There are the following three rules that the Rabbanon made these takanos, and they made them like a hilchta b'loy taima. They made them as if it's like a halacha without a reason. They have reasons. They have valid reasons because, for example, in the case of the house over here, since he cleared it out of all of the stuff, Tosfos says, and the son himself isn't going to have anywhere else to live after his wedding, then it makes sense the father is not in the house. And similarly with the other two dinim, you can find reasons for them. But nevertheless, the Chachamim didn't make the din depend on the reason. They just said, it's a blanket statement, as if it's like a zeret hakol. Chodah, number one is the one we just had about the house for the son. Idach, a second one is the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, was this that we had in the previous parak, that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, HaKosav Kol Mechasav Le'ishtoi. If somebody writes a document that he's giving all of the chasim to his wife, Loyasa Ela Apatrupa, he only made her an Apatrupa because we said over there we don't assume that a person is going to want to disinherit all his children completely in favor of his wife. So again, the Rabbana made a Hilchta B'loy Taima, but that's it. It's a given, we go according to that understanding.
That's it.
If he
sources all of his children.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the normal way of doing it. And then the wife collects the silver, who gets the donor, as the case may be. Idach, and number three, is the Amar Rav, is a din that Rav said, which we learned way back in Gittin. Monali b'yadcha t'neiru l'ploini. If Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me a mona, I want you to give that mona to Levi, the Maimad Shlosh, then it was in the presence of all three of them, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are all present when this is said, Kona, then Levi is Kona that mona, because, now again, there is a logical reason behind it. It's a very common thing that Pliny owes you money and you're going to transfer it to somebody else in payment of something that you owe him, or whatever. So the Chumdin weren't going to burden you to make it with a Kinyan and Adim and so forth. So those are the three halachas that are the below time. And that's it. It's a given that's the halacha, and there's no argument with it. Mishnah says, Achin Hashutfin, if you have brothers who are also partners, meaning again, they did not divide up the estate, they're still managing it jointly, should nafal echad mehem le'umnus, one of them fell into it having to be a craftsman. Now, what does that mean? We'll see in the Gemara that it means, in other words, that basically he was taken into the king's service. He has to work for a certain period of time for the king. Nafal Emsa, then whatever happens over there, whatever profit he makes from his business, that Ashbam gives an example. Let's say, for example, he's a tax collector, goes to the common property. To the common property, because again, they didn't split up the property. We'll see in the Gemara. We'll see in the Gemara the details about that. It really depends on what basis was he appointed. So we'll see. But the Mephoshim also point out, and actually it says in the Yerushalmi, we're not just talking about the gains, we're also talking about the losses. You could have, for example, you know, that he ends up working for the king, and the king pays him a low salary or whatever, you know, so he ends up losing on the deal. That loss also has to be borne by all the brothers equally. Cholov and Estrape, another din. What if one of the sons got sick and he had doctor bills? Estrape, Mishalatmoy, he has to pay the doctor bills out of his own portion. Those don't come out of the common property. Again, we'll see in the Gemara that it's not so simple. So the Gemara starts off. Tana, Chai Umnus L'Umnus Hamelech. When we say Nofal L'Umnus, we mean that he has to now do work for the king for a certain period of time. So the Rashbam describes that what they would do is sometimes like they would have from the Goldberg family, one of you is going to be a tax collector for the next month. Then the next month the Silverberg family, and then the next month the Copperberg family, and so forth, going through the different families in town. Turn it up on. Echad min ha'achan sheminu gabay opu mustas. If you have one of the brothers who was appointed a gabai, meaning a tax collector, a pulmustus, or a pulmustus, the Rashbam brings two explanations. One is that it means a policeman, and the other is that it means a soldier. Yeah, the word pulmus throughout Shas usually means a war. So therefore, it makes sense that pulmustus would be a warrior, a soldier. There is. I don't know why the Rashbam doesn't bring the third possibility. Also, you have the famous story of the guy from Ludki who comes out to Israel and buys like a million dinars worth of oil. Rashi mentions it. Rashi refers to it, and then in the bracha and the bracha of Osher. And the expression in the Gemara is that they pointed Pulmus to Sefer. So it sounds like Pulmus could also mean like a commissioner or something. And maybe the Rashbam had a different view saying that Gemara. I don't know. Okay. All these Greek words tend to get easily confused in the Gemara, you know? Okay. Anyway, so he was appointed to one of these positions, and now he's either making or losing money, as the case may be. So we said in the Mishnah that not the Lamsa, that the profits and the losses get shared equally among all them. But the Braith says it's not so simple. If he was appointed because of the other brothers, meaning, in other words, that each family is expected to provide one moiches or one whatever for a certain period of time, then indeed, yeah, the profits or the losses go to all the brothers. They go to the estate, to undivided estate, because he's only appointed because he's a member of this family, not based on his own merits or whatever. But if he was appointed because of himself, because he himself is a particularly important or sharp or talented or whatever person, then whatever profits or losses go are his own business. Okay. So Gemara says, well, okay, if we're saying if he was appointed because of the other brothers, then you're saying all the profits and the losses go to the brothers. Sure, isn't it obvious? The answer is Leitzricha B'chorif Tve. Yes, but you can be talking about where there's both. He is a member of this family, but he also happens to be the sharpest or the most talented among them. Mao Detema Churfe Goramle. You could argue, therefore, okay, the main reason why he was appointed Dafka is because of his sharpness, because he's good at that kind of thing. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush. We don't say that. Nevertheless, though, because the Minog Hamadina is that a person from each family is picked, then we ignore his own qualities and talents and whatever, and we assume he was just picked mainly because he's from this particular family.
Gorim, like
his shortness was Gorim that he should be appointed. Cause that he should be appointed. Come on, we don't say that. Turn it up, man. If one of the brothers take 200 zuz, the reason why we use the figure 200 zuz, we find in other places in the Gemara, that's the amount that a person can be expected to live on for a year. So he takes 200 zuz out of the estate, luma toto luma umnus, so to support himself while he's looming toto or while he's looming a trade. So in other words, he's going out of town for that purpose. He's going off to yeshiva or lahavdol college. Yecholim achin loy maloy. The other brothers can tell him like this: Im ata etzlenu yeshul chamazonis. If you stay with us in the house, you will be entitled to mazonis out of the common estate. Im ein ata etzlenu ein mazonis. But if you don't stay with us, if you're going to be living elsewhere, you're not entitled to mazonis out of the estate. Fine, your 200 zuz will deduct from your portion when we eventually split the estate, and you're going to be responsible for your own expenses. The question is, why shouldn't they just say that wherever he needs to eat the same amount and he has the same expenses regardless where he lives? Why don't we just say that, therefore, you know, we would figure he's going to use X amount or he's going to use X amount per year on food. So fine, that'll still come out of the common property. They'll send him a check or something. The answer is Messiah le Rav Huna. The fact that we don't say that supports what Rav Huna said. The Amar Rav Huna Birkas Habayis Beruva, because Rav Huna says the bracha of a house is in the number of people in it. Meaning, the Rashbam just says that if he was living with them, the house would be more blessed because of it. So the more people there are, the idea is the better their mazel is. Tosfos mentions
children.
Yeah, we're talking about adults over here, but still, it was very common in those days that you still have them all living in the living together. So Tosfos mentions two possibilities. The second one is basically the same thing, just in different words, that the Rashbam says, that the mazel of more people is greater. So therefore, the house is more likely to have a bracha on the basis of that. The first explanation they bring is Rabbeinu Hananel says, for example, ner echad ner lemeir. You have certain kinds of expenses that you have the same amount of expense, whether it's one person or a lot of people in the house. For example, candles. You have to light a candle for light, or turn on the light bulb for light, regardless whether there's one person living in the house or ten.
If you have different rooms,
but whatever. Put it in modern terms. Let's say, for example, a refrigerator. Regardless whether you got one person living in an apartment or ten people, you're still going to need a refrigerator. They only had one or two rooms, but yeah. Okay. So that's a different point. Also, back in Ksubas, we have this expression, Birkas Habayis Beruva. I think Rashi explained it just like that. That it means, for example, when you go grocery shopping or whatever, you're buying in bulk. More of it, less of it gets wasted. Indeed, yeah, because you're one person. It's for whatever. No, it could be whatever his expenses are. I mean, it could be, he took 200, but then he's arguing that he should still be entitled. He's arguing that the 200, for example, will pay for rent wherever he's staying and No, they're not. He's saying, I'm taking 200 zuz out of it. Fine, that'll be, I know that 200 zuz comes out of my portion when we eventually divide it. But then he's saying, in addition, however, what about my food and other day-to-day expenses, like clothing? The 200 is not for food. The 200 is for rent and for tuition and for whatever. Traveling, yeah. So Birkas Habayis Beruva, so therefore, the greater bracha for the house is when you have more people in it. So therefore, they can argue the fact that you're not here means that the expenses that you need for food and whatever are more than they would otherwise be if they were with us. Okay, so the question is, fine, in that case, then they should prorate it. They should figure out, tackle what the difference is between his expenses living alone versus his expenses living in the house, and do it accordingly. The answer is, you're right, Hachinami, that is indeed true. We don't mean that he's not entitled to mazonis out of it at all, but he's only entitled to mazonis at the rate that it would go for if he was living locally, if he was living in the house with them. And the fact that it costs more than that. In other words, again, let's put it in terms of an electricity bill, let's say. If he was living there, let's say, there wouldn't be an extra electricity bill for a fridge, because they'd have a fridge anyway. There'd be the extra electricity, let's say, for the light in his room or whatever. It's like this, when he's living elsewhere, you have a light in his room as well as his refrigerator. So that they're not obligated to pay for the electric bill for his refrigerator, let's say. If you say it's a matter of mazel, then Tosfos says, how are you going to quantify that? And the answer is, so it says, okay, so you look, let's say, how much were we spending before versus how much are we spending this year? Right? Again, in terms of electric bill, look, what was your electric bill last year? What was it this year? And compare. So you're still able to do it like that. Okay, then Tosafot says not necessarily, not everybody has the same mazel. Okay. Anyway. All right, then we said cholov and itzrape.
Anything but food.
So anything, what?
Food, obviously, the more people, the more food, the greater the
No, but again, you can have, let's say, for example, you can have, but the amount that one person buys for themselves is more than what they would buy if they were just there in the household, where some of it, that's what Yaakov was saying, for example, some of the food ends up getting shared with other people. You buy, let's say, for example, you buy whatever, you buy food and it gets shared among the house. You don't necessarily
need cheaper than you share.
It does kind of, because you have, there's less waste, exactly. Yeah, so like this, you can't eat it, and therefore it sits
right
in the back of your fridge for a month, and, you know, and then...
Well, when you buy the chicken, it's $5 a pound, or $3.
Yeah, there's that too, right, yeah. Two can live as cheaply as one, is the expression in English, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, okay. Then we said cholov and istirafi. We said cholov and nisrape. We said that if one of the brothers gets sick and he has doctor bills, nisrape mishal asme. We said the doctor bills he has to pay out of his own cushion. Sholach Ravin mishmeid Rav Ila. However, Ravin send a message from Eretz Yisrael in the name of Rav Ila. It's not so simple. Loishanu elash cholov b'pshia. That is only true if he became sick because he was careless,
negligence.
Ava ba'oynis. But if he became sick through an oynis. Then nisrap him in an emsa. Then indeed they all have to share in it because he couldn't have helped it. Tosfos brings another thing from the Tosefta, is that it also depends on, are we talking about, is it a known amount or is it an open ended thing where it could be a refuah that goes on for a very long time. If it's open ended like that, ein lakitzva, then it's similar to mezonis. It's similar to mezonis, which is also an open ended thing. It's an ongoing thing. If it's chronic illness, in other words, as opposed to if it's a known thing, you're going to need such and such medicines, and it's going to cost you X amount, then he has to do it mishal atzmo. So there's a machlokas among the rishonim, and from there in turn among the poskim, how these two things fit together. Is it that he pays for it by himself only if it was pshia and it was yesh lakitzva? But if it's one or the other, then not. Or does it have to be? As long as it's shia, he always pays, whether it's open-ended or not. And if it was bonus, then only if it's closed-ended. Okay. Heichi dami b'pshia. What do we mean that he got sick because of carelessness? Kidur of Chanina. It's like what Chanina said. The Amr of Chanina. Hakol bidei shemayim chut mitzinim pachim. Everything is in the hands of everything is in the hands of the Eibishter except for cold and heat. Actually, the Rashbam brings two explanations of what sinim pachim is. Sinim definitely means cold, and pachim, one possibility is it can mean a stumbling block, like a path is like a pit that a trap that a person falls into. So a person gets trapped and becomes sick because of the cold. Or the other explanation is it means cold and heat. So no, the person is responsible. A person is responsible to, if it's cold, put on a sweater, and if it's warm, wear lighter clothing. Of course, everything is in Hashem's hands, ultimately, but what we mean is that Hashem decides what's going to happen to a person, but a person is responsible to take care of themselves, and sinim pachem is an example that you're responsible for watching yourself. Now, Tosfos says, I mean, when we say that, akol bidei shemayim chutz mitzinim pachem, what we mean is, obviously, I mean, a person could, rachmana l'tzlan, commit suicide, that's a different thing. We're talking about a person preserving his health. Sinim pachem are something that a person can preserve their own health. You're responsible for that. You can assume, unless you have reason to know otherwise. I think I mentioned before, we had this gemara before, we had it way back in Ksubas. I think I mentioned at the time the story of a Rav, Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky, who was sent off to Siberia for a few years, and they didn't give him any proper clothing over there. So he says, yes, Eivishter, you have this Gemara, but on the other hand, here, I'm not able to protect myself because they're not giving me any. So therefore, it returns, it's back, Bidei Shemayim. And sure enough, during all the time he was there, he never even caught so much as a cold. Okay. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, you know, the famous Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky. He wrote an important sefer on the Tosefta called Chazon Yechezkel. I'm given to understand that actually at one point he auditioned for the position of Rosh Hashiva and Lubavitch, but they didn't like his bullying or whatever, so he didn't get the job. Okay, anyway. What then is that? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Anyway. Tosfos mentions, by the way, you know, you have, when you start saying HaKol B'Yedei Shamayim, the usual famous expression that everybody knows, HaKol B'Yedei Shamayim, Chutz M'Yedei Shamayim. What's that? What are we saying over here? Chutz M'Tinim Pachim. So Tosfos says, that's talking about midos. Midos are, the Eibishter doesn't decide what your midos are going to be. The Eibishter decides what your life circumstances are going to be. Poor or rich or tall or short or what have you. But what your midos, are you going to have Yedei Shamayim or not? That the Eibishter leaves up to you. That's the Chiruch function.
Here we're
talking about what happens to a person's health. There we're talking about what a person makes of his life. Shenema, as the pasuk says, tzinim pachim v'derech ikish, tzinim pachim, whatever the two explanations of tzinim pachim are in the way of a crooked person or a stubborn person. Shemer nafshe yuchak mehem, a person who guards his life will stay away from them. So we see a person that expects you to guard yourself from it, and if not, then it's considered pshia. Next Mishnah is going to bring up the Mishnah and then the Gemara, which we'll start with today and continue with tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, is going to talk about an interesting concept that they had in those days called Shushvinus. A Shushvin means a good friend. Shushvinus is, the minhag was in those days that you would go to a wedding and you would bring with you stuff that would help pay towards the expenses of the wedding. Then later on, when you got married, then the other guy would do the same for you in return. And we'll see in the Mishnah, and we'll see more in the Gemara, that this is actually something. It's enforceable and based in. It's considered a real honest-to-goodness arrangement that was prearranged. There's not just you can't say, well, you did these shushvinus very nice, you're a good friend and all, but I'm not obligated to redo it. No, if not, then you can actually take the person to based in for it. The Mishnah says, if some of the brothers did shushvinus while the father was alive. So the Rashbam explains the situation was, the father sent one or more of his children to the wedding, along with presents. So now later on, if the shushvinus is going to be repaid when one of these children gets married, and the other guy is going to pay back the shushvinus, and this is after the father passed away, Chazra la'emsa, then it goes back to the common pool. Because they did it on behalf of the whole family. The Rambam and the Ravid disagree on the details of this, and the Magid Mishnah explains over there in some detail that basically they're arguing about, are we talking about that the sons went as representatives of the family, basically, or whether they went as individuals. If they went as representatives of the family, that's what the Mishnah means over here, that it goes lamsa, as opposed to that if they went as individuals, then it goes individually back to them. Because shushvinus is something that can actually be collected in Beis Din. It's the equivalent of their father having lent the other guy money. But if a person sends to somebody else jugs of wine or of oil, then a nigbin be Beis Din, that cannot be collected in Beis Din, with nation gmilas chasadim, because that's gmilas chasadim. So what are we talking about over here? The Rashbam says one possibility is we're talking about there's no chuppah, there's no wedding involved. You've sent him barrels of wine or oil or whatever. So that's fam. You gave him a present. It's not expected to be a quid pro quo. The other explanation the Rashbam says is it was what? No. So the Rashbam's first explanation is that here you just send a kadayayin, the kadeshem, and without a specific occasion. The other possibility that Rashbam says it was for a wedding, but you didn't actually go to participate in the wedding. You sent Kadei Yayin to Kadei Shemen, so that's not considered Shushvinus. Shushvinus is, there has to be, that you sent him stuff as well as you yourself attended the wedding. That's called Shushvinus. Some of the Rishonim have yet another explanation. I think the Rambam, among others, says that another difference is Shushvinus, it consists of when you're sending him money or gifts or whatever, not when you're sending food. The definition of shushvinus, according to the Rambam, is that you're sending him that you're sending him money or presents or whatever, not that you're sending him food for the wedding, not food. Yeah. So that would be another reason why the Mishnah is saying that it's not nigris for Beis Din, that it can't be collected in Beis Din, because that would just be gemilas chasadim.
anything else would be suspended?
According to the Rashbam, that's the distinction. According to the Rashbam, the distinction again is either that, yes, food can be shushvinus as well, but there has to be a wedding involved, otherwise nothing to talk about, or that shushvinus can be food, but you yourself have to show up at the wedding yourself. So Gemara says a Ramini. I have a contradiction that a Braitha says, Sholach loy ovev shushvinus, if a person's father sent to somebody else shushvinus, again, that he sent one of the children along with shushvinus, chazeres loy. Then when that shushvinus returns to him, it returns only to that one son, not to the common pool. Our Mishnah said it returns to the common pool. Nishtalcha l'aviv shushvinus, on the other hand, if the shushvinus was sent to his father, kshi chazeres and emsa, then when the father's estate, after the father passed away and the sons have to repay the shushvinus, then it gets paid out of the common estate.
The father
sent it while he was alive, so therefore now it's something on the estate. You're right. Our Mishnah, when it said that it was sent, that the Mishnah said ha'achen sha'asim chasim shushvinus, it means that it was sent to the father. Okay, but ha'achen sha'asim chasim shushvinus katani. What do you mean? It says that the brothers, who some of them did shushvinus, implying they were the givers, not the receivers. The answer is tani l'mitzasim. Okay, not it was mitzasim shushvinus, that some of them did the shushvinus, but rather it came to some of them, l'mitzasim, to some of them as representatives of the family. Okay, v'achazur shushvinus katani. What about though the Mishnah says the shushvinus eventually returns to the common pool? The answer is hachak katani, chazur ligbois nigbis b'amtza. If it returns, not that it returns that the other guy is going to be repaying the shushvinus to them, but the other way around. If they are now in a situation where they have to pay, not where they're sending back a shushvinus, we assume the Mishnah was talking about the shushvinus came to them, and now they're repaying it later. It's the other way around. They previously did a shushvinus outbound. Now they're getting it back, but now it comes back. Ligbois, if it comes, if they're going to be collecting it and based it, then it comes back la'emta, it comes back to the common pool. And then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with another explanation and more details about how the shushvinus works, when we say the shushvinus applies, when it doesn't.